All lines are now bridged.
Hey, hello, and welcome everyone to the Trusted Exchange Framework Task Force of the Health Information Technology Advisory Committee. This is Lauren Ritchie, the designated federal officer. I will now call the meeting to order, starting with a roll call. Denise Webb?
Present.
Arianne Malik?
Good morning.
Carolyn Peterson? Oh, Carolyn. Aaron Meary? No, Aaron. John Kansky?
I'm here.
Hi, John. Cheryl Turney? No, Cheryl. Sasha Tamat?
Hello.
Steve Reedy?
Here.
Cynthia Fisher? Cynthia. Anil Jain?
I'm here.
Okay. Kate Goodrich? Okay. Okay. David McCallie?
I'm here.
Mark Savage?
Good morning, here.
Noam Arts? Grace Terrell? Okay. We may have to circle back about halfway through just to check to see if any other additional members have joined. I would also
Yeah, I see a note.
This is Carolyn Peterson. I joined.
Yeah.
Okay. Hi, Carolyn.
Good.
This is Cynthia Fisher.
Noam.
I joined. Hi, Cynthia.
Noam let us know that he had a health emergency that he had to deal with, and I see Julia Tully saying she's taking notes on behalf of Cheryl Turney.
Okay. Thank you for the update. Okay, just a reminder to the task force members to please use the hand-raising functionality within Adobe if you have a question or comment. And with that, I will turn it over to our co-chairs, Denise and Arianne.
Good afternoon.
Split duties, and Denise has taken this one, so maybe we should just go over how we're planning on allocating sharing duties.
Yeah, absolutely. So Arianne and I have agreed to divide the leadership duties for each of the calls, and I'll be taking that responsibility today. And for the permitted purposes and use case call, and Arianne will be doing the other two areas around the QHIN and privacy and security. So I think with the limited time we have, we should get right into the discussion here. Before we start, though, I do want to let everybody know that today we really want to get input from the task force members on the questions that were sent out related to the recognized coordinating entity. We're not going to be doing any voting today. We really want to get the input, and then there will be some drafting of recommendations, and that's when we'll do our deliberation. So I just wanted to clarify that. So let's get started. Just to remind you about what the charge is around the recognized coordinating entity, we are looking at particular eligibility requirements for the RCE that ONC should consider when developing the cooperative agreement.
And I'm sorry, Denise, just to interrupt for 1 second, can we have everyone mute their lines if they're not speaking? I think we have a little bit of background chatter. Thank you.
Thank you, Lauren. If we could go to the next slide. Okay, just I don't think, unless any of the task force members would like us to go into detail on the review of the RCE, and if it's okay with everyone, I could just summarize. The ONC is intending to select, through a competitive process, a single RCE, and the RCE is going to take the requirements from Part B of the TEF and incorporate them into a single common agreement. So they are going to play a role in onboarding the QHINs and getting QHINs that are eligible to voluntarily agree to abide by the common agreement and so forth. So what we're going to talk about today, we're going to go over these list of questions to get your input on what are the things, and I would say, what are the things that ONC should consider in the cooperative agreement?
And sorry, then, Denise, not to interrupt you, but can we just move up to the next slide since we're going over the discussion questions?
Oh, yes. Thank you.
If keep going to the discussion question slide.
Yeah. And so not only what should the ONC consider including, but you also might want to think about what we would want to recommend to ONC that shouldn't be included as well. I mean, you can look at it from both sides of the coin. So these are the discussion questions we're going to go over, and we're going to go over each of these one by one. And again, remind everybody if you could raise your hand to contribute your responses to these questions. Let's go ahead and get started with the first question around what outcomes or milestones should recognized coordinating entity be accountable for over the three-year award period. So I think that's next slide. All right, on this slide, just to get you all thinking about maybe some ideas, we're providing some examples of some outcomes and milestones that we might consider as a task force and any other ideas that the task force members may have. I'm not going to read these to you, but I open up for discussion what your thoughts are on this area.
So Denise, this is Mark. I raised my hand. Do you want me to just jump in or do you want me to wait for you to call?
Oh, no, go ahead, Mark.
Okay. So the examples here all looked pretty common sense to me. What I did notice is that they are mostly process outcomes and milestones, not outcomes or milestones. And I co-chaired the interoperability measurement committee for NQF that developed for ONC an interoperability measurement framework. And I think it would be a good outcome and set of milestones for the RCE to be measuring interoperability across sort of the domains and subdomains in that framework, both to get a baseline and to develop get some trend measurements and see what's working, what's not working, where there may be disparities. So I'll just throw that out as a general idea. Happy to discuss it. Happy to go into detail at the appropriate time. But generally, measuring interoperability at a granular, at a somewhat granular level, sort of a big picture granular level, the way the framework was set up.
Great. Thank you for that input. And I do think we sort of separated out the questions in terms of phasing by X date, what do we want to see in place and happening, you know, milestones versus metrics and measures. I think we have a question on a later question about specific measures or metrics.
This is Ari. And I'll rephrase maybe then the point, which is that we don't see an outcome here that lists that providers across the country can connect to their chosen qualified HIN and have the data flow according to permitted purposes. And that clear outcome that the data should be flowing is probably the most critical success factor for the RCE. And everything else is kind of an enablement.
Mm-hmm. And what do we think about in terms of a reasonable time frame for achieving that metric, or would we recommend that be phased out by the first year X percentage of our providers are able to connect, so forth?
There's a question on that.
Who was that?
This is David. I'm Macaulay. I've raised my hand. I just was.
Go ahead, David.
It's hard not to answer when you ask a question.
Yeah.
I was just going to comment that I think there's a phasing question coming up that goes into a lot of detail. Over what should be done in first year, second year, third year. But I wanted to come back to the original question and just make a high-level comment that, I mean, a lot of these questions are obviously intertwined, and, you know, the way you answer one will depend a little bit on how we answer the other ones. But at a high level, to me, the least clear thing that may affect the way we answer these questions is what's the separation of concerns between ONC's role and the RCE role. And just for purposes of example, one way I've been thinking about it or trying to think about it is that the ONC could be focused on sort of setting policy and policy minimums, and the RCE could be responsible for converting that into the common agreement and implementation guides for the selected use cases. And if you structure it a certain way like that, then the expectations around milestones might be different than if you structured it a different way. So that's just the way I've been thinking about it. And I know some of the others who've submitted comments have looked at it that way as well, to keep ONC on the policy minimums and, in a sense, if you would, the high-level policy requirements, and then have the RCE deliver the particular implementation artifacts, including the common agreement and implementation guides.
So just to summarize, have the ONC focus on policy, have the RCE focus on operationalizing that policy.
On the details, including, you know, for example, the specific architecture choices and the standards selected and so forth. So their deliverables would be those kinds of artifacts, the details to operate, and ONC's would be on the policy minimums.
Okay. Let's go to John. I know your hand's up, John.
Yep. Thank you. So I think we all understand that ONC is ultimately going to have to find the right balance to setting requirements, whether that be on the to hold the RCE accountable for, or a future topic of what the QHINs are required to do. There has to be an achievability to be successful. So one of the things I was this applies to the phasing as well, in terms of knowing that TEFCA is going to change, and we'll talk about phasing in a second. I think that's going to be important to what gets put in what year. But one of the questions that I'm struggling with is, what can you hold the RCE accountable for in terms of, number one, how many QHINs are engaged, have signed on to the cooperative agreement or a common agreement, and how many QHINs have achieved, live status, given that much of that seems to be outside the RCE's control.
Okay. Arian, your hand's up.
Oh, sorry, I already made the point relative to, and notwithstanding the notion that we, the RCE is relies on QHINs. I think if we have an RCE that does all of its process checkboxes, but QHINs aren't connecting to provider organizations and data is not flowing, I don't think at the end of the day we would judge the RCE as being successful, notwithstanding that they're dependent on both ONC and the QHIN to get that outcome going.
All right. And Mark, your hand is up.
Sure. I wanted to go back and appreciate Arian's point that as an outcome, expect providers across the nation should be able to connect and have the data flowing. Wanted to expand that, though. The ONC is clear that there are six or seven different kinds of users for which this is designed so that HINs, public health payers, patients, individuals, those various stakeholder groups that are supposed to be able to use this on-ramp should all be able to get their data and have it flowing across the country.
Thank you. Great point. Yep.
And then it looks like Aaron Mary has joined, and your hand is up.
Yes, thank you. So I have a point in regards to, especially on the last one about patients to, being able to access this. You know, I think that there should be some sort of measurement stick as to the successful validation of their identity and making sure that whomever is accessing the data and the data flows appropriately from one to the other, that these are validated folks accessing the system, sharing data amongst each other, and that the output has been successful because of successful identification. So to me, the security and privacy concerns have got to be one of the many milestones that we measure over 3 years to show that, yes, you can trust sharing your information on the network. Yes, it was received by a trusted party on the network, and you're good to go. So as a provider organization, they feel comfortable and a patient feels comfortable.
Thank you. Steve Reed.
Hi, yeah, thank you. So this may fall a little bit under the fourth bullet point, but when we think about the onboarding of the QNs, you know, you have that initial list of expectations and requirements to become a qualified HIN. Should we have any consideration for lack of a better word, some sort of attestation for subsequent years that you are maintaining minimum requirements to be a QHIN?
Thank you. John?
Just thinking about, it's John. Just thinking about whether it's data flowing that we want to hold the RCE accountable to, for as an output, or whether it's QHINs connected or whether it's participation levels, do we see holding the RCE accountable for those measures which the QHINs and their participants are going to be jointly responsible for, and the RCE will flow down those responsibilities as part of their contracting via the common agreement? I guess it's more of a question than an answer. I'm seem to be on the side of being concerned that we give the RCE achievable things to be accountable for.
So are you suggesting that they be responsible for the flow down, or that should be clearly spelled out in the cooperative agreement in terms of?
Yeah, sorry, that wasn't clear. So if we determine that whoever becomes the RCE must agree to be held accountable for A through Z, we should be careful choosing things for which they can't, that won't scare off good RCE candidates.
Okay.
And second, and I guess we can achieve have more things on that list if we perceive that they can, that the RCE can pass on responsibility for achieving some of those metrics in their QHIN agreement.
All right, thank you. I'm going to ask Zoe to help us with time, watching the time here, and moving on to the, if we need to move on to the next slide. I do have three more hands held up here. I have David and Neil, and then Aaron, Mary again. Why don't we quickly go through and then go to the next slide. David?
Thanks, it's David. I think just in piling on to the last comment, the kind of thing the RCE could be held accountable for might be more along the lines of the implementation guides around the particular use cases. It will probably be up to the QHINs to be responsible for ensuring that they get enough participants to sign up and that they get their data to flow and stuff. So I think that is an important distinction. The RCE is accountable for implementation guide in the common agreement, but not for actual activity on the network, probably.
And I want to note that Stasha made the same comment via the chat feature.
And sorry, this is Zoe, and that's a great comment. And we do have a slide actually specifically about measures and distinguishing between which measures the are accountable for from the RC is accountable to ONC as opposed to the measures that the QHINs are accountable for to report up to the RC. So
all
right. I don't know if we want to move on to that, to the next slide.
Why don't we move on to the next slide? And I know I have Anil next in the queue. And some others haven't chimed in yet, but please, if you have thoughts, raise your hand so we can get your thoughts. This is tied to the first question. I know it might be kind of difficult for our task force to actually, without having a whiteboard in front of us with a list of all the ideas everybody has contributed so far, to talk about, well, what should happen in year one, year two, and year three, respectively. Maybe we can hit on, you know, what are the most critical things that we would see happening in year one versus two and three. I'm going to call on Anil because you're in the queue next.
Great. Yeah, thank you. So I think this my comments relate to this specific area as well as the prior one. But, you know, I think if we're all going to agree that the RCE is trying to operationalize the TEFCA, that we have to come up with some milestones that help achieve what the whole point of all this is, which is simplification of what providers have to go through in order to connect. So I think some of those milestones, and we could work backwards from year 3, 2, 1, but have to be, is there oversimplification occurring in our ecosystem? Are there less connections being made to disparate systems, or are providers able to connect to a QHIN, a single QHIN in their network and simplify some of the challenges they have? And then we can work backwards all the way to year one, where year one, the milestone might simply be how many folks have signed on to a common agreement. But I do think that if we're going to hold the RCE accountable, it ought to be for the reasons that they're overseeing the QHINs from an operationalizing the TEFCA perspective, which is how do we actually simplify and gain adoption for our overall framework.
Thank you, Aaron. David?
That was Anil, by the way.
Oh, sorry, Anil. I know that. I'm looking at the screen and not thinking. So actually, Aaron was next.
Yep. All right. So real quick, I'll make this quick. I know we're running close on time here. I do believe that one of the measurements that we should ask of the RCE particularly is to highlight and identify and tease out as this is spun up issues for data flow. And I know the term information blocking has been thrown around so often and is miscategorized, but there's a lot of other reasons why information doesn't flow besides technology challenges. And I would like to hope that through this mechanism, we can highlight some of those. And I'll give you a case in point. In a previous life as a hospital CIO, there were competitive issues where a hospital in the same geography as mine would not share data with me because they're worried about losing a referral. And it's things like that that are nothing to do with technology that I'm sure will be stumbled upon with an RCE. And those issues, as they're brought up in aggregate, as this really comes online, will be helpful in crafting additional policy guidance for HITACH and for others to consider moving forward.
All right, thank you. David, and if you could be real quick, there's a few people who haven't spoken, and we'd like to give them a chance to.
Okay. I looked at this question in terms of a project plan, like what would I do, how would I sequence the activities? Maybe that's not exactly the way the question was asked, but if you have a project plan, then you can sort of draw the deliverable dates and say you need to be at this point by this date. But I think, it starts with defining governance, electing the members and stakeholders that are going to participate, identifying the modular use cases, and getting ONC to approve them, developing the cooperative agreement necessary to support the use cases that are to be started with, developing the implementation guides for those use cases, define some kind of a crossover plan for existing interoperability to migrate over to those use cases, recruit the QHINs and then start piloting the implementation guides, and when sufficient pilot experience has been attained, start crossing over. And then in parallel to all that, start working on the next use case, probably in a separate thread of people working on it. The do no harm mandate applies because these things are not supposed to disrupt existing interoperability. So mm-hmm. have to stage it in that way. I think there was a lot of feedback that I've gotten from people I've talked to that the thought that this would happen very quickly. Well, let me say it better. That the current proposed timelines may be too quick. These are pretty complicated things. So it may take 3 years to achieve widespread liveness on a single use case, for example. And that shouldn't be considered a failure.
Thank you. Carolyn, you're up.
Thanks, Denise. My comment relates both to this question and to the previous one. You know, in thinking about what should be required in which year, I want to really strongly recommend that we don't push off patient and consumer access to their data to year three. I think that absolutely needs to be no later than year two, and depending on how the rest of the schedule floats, possibly even in late year one. It has been an expectation that patients and consumers can access their data for some years, and in many places that's not happening. I know we've had some back and forth about what the RCE is responsible for and where the QHIN should be picking things up, but I think we need to not lose that aspect of consumers getting access to their own data. Thanks.
All right, thank you. Arian Malik.
Yep, so just want to endorse David's notion that we, and a number of other people's notion, that we start from end stage outcomes and work backwards. And we may discover through that process, as David pointed out, that the end stage working backwards may push us past a three-year life cycle. I also want to point out Sasha on the comment. Thought it was important to define what year one was, and that's a key consideration. So, you know, what the starting point is, we need to be clear about what the end stage steady state looks like. We should be clear about, and then we should work backwards from the end stage to the start point and make sure that we've got realistic timelines associated with it. And then as a process measure, because of time, we're half an hour through this call, I might suggest that this is an area where we could get email feedback on some milestones. That might be a more effective way of collecting some of the more specifics that we might be looking to get.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I think that's a good idea. We could assign that as some homework. All right, so should we go ahead, given the time, why don't we move to the next slide?
Denise, while you're moving, can I just throw out one question that for ONC to, or somebody to give us some thoughts? What is expected to be in place at the outset? What is expected, say, at the end of year one? And maybe that's for us to decide, to help define with milestones, but there's a way in which the way this is written, you expect you should be able to do all of this stuff at the beginning, which is not realistic. And so just hearing from ONC what they're expecting at the beginning could be useful. Thanks.
Hey, yeah, this is Zoe. I can take that. I think mostly we're looking for your feedback on that. What we're thinking specifically is we need to have the common agreement developed by at least by the end of 2018, because that's when we're going to be releasing the final TAFCA. And so I think that's really the base requirement for year one, and then it would also be good to have the onboarding process in place as soon as possible so that we can start getting qualified hands signed on beginning in 2019.
So the beginning of the three-year contract would be when? The moment that it's awarded? Is that when the timer starts?
I believe so, which is right now we're anticipating August 1st.
Thank you.
All right. Now, I know some of you have already mentioned metrics. This next question is around what metrics should we consider for measuring the success or compliance with the expected milestones. So I think there was a mixture of discussion around outcomes and metrics, and sometimes the lines blurred. Let's look at two areas, how the RCE is performing with respect to its responsibilities to ONC, and then how the RCE is measuring success of the qualified HINs. So there's some examples here on the slide. And I, like I said, I know some of you have already provided some input in this area, which we are capturing. So thoughts on this? David, your hand's up.
Yeah, I already made a comment on the deliverable back to ONC, I think would be the implementation guide, the common agreement and the implementation guides, in, you know, as the critical deliverable, because without that you can't onboard and start to operate. On the RCE measure for the qualified HINs, I think ONC should look to groups like Commonwealth and Care Quality for the metrics that they currently use to track their member participation, because those are sort of hard-won lessons learned on how to measure growth of a network and utilization of the network. What's a real measure and what's a noisy measure? And I'm not going to try to enumerate those, but my experience with Commonwealth is it took some time to figure out how to even measure utilization. So don't lose that learning.
Okay, thank you. Others, any thoughts on this? Maybe some of the folks we haven't heard from yet? Arian.
Yeah, I'm clearly not one of the folks you haven't heard from yet, but I actually, this is sort of a meta point. I think David and a number of others made the point that the RCE should be responsible for, that ONC should be responsible for establishing the policy direction, and the RCE should be responsible for the enablement of that policy direction and operationalization of that policy direction, including many of the implementation specifications. As the TEFCA is written right now, there are some things that are embedded in the TEFCA itself that are not RCE duties. And I want to acknowledge that at least some members of this task force believe that the duties should be partitioned somewhat differently. And I don't know what the right time to have that discussion is, but I think we'd be remiss if we didn't have that discussion and see whether we agree or disagree or have split agreement or disagreement on that point.
All right. So do you think we should have that discussion along these lines then?
I think it's probably more important than the metrics and milestones question.
Mm-hmm.
More foundational.
Okay. And we certainly can take that line of discussion. I saw Sasha's hand go up and then it went back down. Sasha, did you have something?
Oh, well, I was maybe before Arian took us a different direction going to point out that just like we talked earlier about having outcome measures in addition to process measures, we could consider satisfaction-based measures.
Oh, that's a good idea.
I agree with John's concern about not setting up an RCE contract that qualified applicants wouldn't want to consider. So I definitely share John's concern there. But if we think of sort of how practically the industry is likely to evaluate this project, the satisfaction of the participants and the end users seems like it will end up being a key evaluating factor, and maybe we want to formalize that in what would data would be collected and reported.
All right. Thanks, Sasha. If everyone is okay with going down the line of discussion that Arian has suggested, I'm not sure if that's what David and Aaron want to talk about, but David, you have your hand up.
Yes, I do, and it is what I'd like to talk about. I think it's a really important point.
Okay.
And it's the distinction between You know, in a rapidly moving world where technologies are changing and marketplaces are complicated, it's difficult for regulators to put concrete things in regulatory language and then hope that it stays current and up to date over time. So in the 2015 certification edition requirements for APIs for the certified health IT, you know, ONC took a different approach and specified sort of functional requirements for those APIs and then allowed the industry to figure out how to make it actually work and map it to standards like FHIR. And that happened through the Argonaut process, and now it's managed through HL7. And I think that was very effective, that separation of concerns. The policy goal was that they have APIs that consumers can use to access their record. The details got worked out in a rapidly changing technology environment quite successfully, as the recent Apple demonstrations show. So I think that's the model that the RCE-ONC relationship should follow, and know that, you know, the stuff that's in the draft TEFCA gets pretty concrete about specific standards. I would take that out of the TEFCA or common agreement and put those in the implementation guides and have the common agreement focus on the principles and the high-level requirements, the functional requirements. So I think I'm just repeating what Arian said, but with that concrete example of mapping back to the 2015 certification edition as a lesson learned study.
Thank you, David. Sasha?
David, I agree, and that was a common theme among many EHR developers as we reviewed the document in the EHRA meetings. The feeling was that the regulatory process would not be able to keep pace with the standards, and that the standards were specified in the draft at an inconsistent level, in some places very detailed and in others extremely high level. And I think the most practical approach there would be, as you suggest, pulling that out into implementation guides that are managed at a different level.
And hey guys, this is Zoe. I just wanted to say one clarification on this topic, and that's just that this isn't being done, the TEFCA and like updating the TEFCA, it's not being done through regulatory process, and so there is some more flexibility in terms of being able to update standards over time because it does not have to go through the regulatory process.
Mm-hmm. I would comment on that though, Zoe, and I have to, you know, I agree with Sasha. That we talked about this on the Karen Alliance board, and you know, having to revisit the common agreement every time standards change, you know, those really do belong outside in a guide, so that as things evolve and change in the marketplace, that those can be updated, and then that the common agreement would just refer back to that guide that the QHINs are expected to use in their implementations. So that was kind of a theme there that I would just add for everybody's consideration too. I think we should, because of time, we need to probably keep moving on here, and the next question gets at...
Sorry, just before we move on, is there mm-hmm. substantive disagreement? So I think there's a perspective that's been expressed by four of us at least. Is there a substantive disagreement on this point, a strong perspective that, in fact, the TEFCA and ONC should be maintaining the TEFCA framework that defines the standards, and the RCE is responsible for implementing those standards versus the coordination of responsibilities that David and Sasha articulated, that ONC articulates the policy goals, and the RCE, in collaboration with ONC and the QHINs, defines the enablement, including the implementation guidance. Is there strong disagreement or difference of opinion on that point, or is that actually a consensus of the task force?
So this is Mark. It's not an either-or question. There may still be some standards worth articulating, but maybe not the distribution that we have in the draft. And I will also say that if the focus is instead going to be on function and say the principles section of the draft TEFCA, there is, I think, significantly more detail functional detail that needs to be in the principles than is currently there. So I paid particular attention to mechanisms for individual access to their information and found a lot of things missing. I would want to see that function, the functional expectations fleshed out, and I give patients and family caregivers as one example of that.
Does anyone else have anything to add to that before we move on to talk about requirements for the RCE selection?
This is David. I would just agree that there's a lot of functional requirement that's not in there yet. By arguing for moving some of the technical and architectural details into implementation guides, it doesn't mean that we don't need more clarity around the functional requirements. I completely agree. And probably staging of them so that it's not all at once, because I think it's a lot of work for even some of the easier ones.
Can we move to the next slide, please? So this next question was one of the core questions ONC was asking us to respond to as a task force, and it's around the eligibility requirements that the RCE would need to meet. And these are some examples. I think I have heard, I've read a lot of the comments that have been submitted to the ONC so far, and there seems to be a resounding agreement around it being a not-for-profit entity. I would just make that contribution. David, you're in the queue.
Yes, certainly. That was my first comment. The success or failure of this will come down in large measure to whether the public and the provider community trust the RCE. So it has to be not for profit. It has to be very transparent. It has to be sort of assiduously neutral in this complicated space, which is a big challenge. But I think those are all things that it needs to be held accountable for.
Arian?
So there's a number of organizations that I think have contemplated being an RCE. And I think when you look at these set of criteria, I don't think anybody would tend to disagree. But it's not clear how they map up against some of the exemplars who want to be an RCE. So, for example, existing active participation and membership across geographic regions for multiple types of stakeholders. Do we have an expectation that the board of directors of the RCE has that same level of balance of interest? There are, for example, RCEs that are primarily composed of integration systems vendors and large IDNs. Is that okay, or do we want an RCE that balances towards both smaller providers and patients and patient access as well? Likewise, would it be appropriate for an RCE to run run through its allied governance affairs an existing organization that might or might not want to be a QHIN? So making sure that these definitions are actionable, and just to be really clear, I'm not arguing for or against any particular organization as an RCE. I just think that it might be that some of the existing organizations that are really well suited to be an RCE might need to change some of the governance and constituency and organizational models that they have in order to do the most effective job as an RCE. And it's not clear to me that these criteria are actionable enough for ONC to be able to make any recommendations or for an RCE, a prospective RCE, to know what changes they might need to make with respect to governance in order to be qualified as an RCE. So in some of these areas, I think we need to be maybe more specific in ways that allow us to clearly delineate what is or what would or wouldn't be good RCE governance.
So I know when the ONC did the state HIE cooperative agreement, they got pretty specific about the representation on a board of the HIE entity. So, to ensure that the broader stakeholder community was represented. Mark, you're up next.
And, Mark, just before you go, sorry, just as a reminder, this is Lauren. We have just about 2 or 3 minutes before we have to open it up for public comment.
Okay. And let me just say this. If we don't get to the other questions, we will ask the task force members to, if they would, supply any comments that they would have or input for the other questions. Go ahead.
Lauren, is there a request to move the last 5 minutes to public comment or last 3 minutes to public comment? Reserving the whole 10 minutes for public comment, I think, would cut into the task force discussion time quite a bit.
Yes, if we have additional time, we can certainly circle back if there aren't comments that fill up the whole 10 minutes.
Mark?
So I'll keep this brief and fast. I think both at the governance level and at the operational level, there should be multi-stakeholder representation, especially something this visible, something this national. I think that's important. There's something on my mind that maybe fits here. The presentation in July, when they looked at sort of the overlap among existing approaches and identified some of the things that were not common across all of the entities, some of those things were pretty significant, and it made me wonder if we should be looking at that list as a part of eligibility requirements. Were some of those significant things anyway, I don't want to monopolize the time, so I'll just throw that out as a placeholder idea to cross-check that.
Thanks, Mark. John?
Try to make a couple points quickly. Both of them are related to making sure we don't create requirements for the RCE eligibility requirements that unintentionally disallow some good organizations or good ideas. I would offer as examples, I think Arian touched on this, that if a corporate structure adjustment is required, that there be enough flexibility for an organization to make the corporate structure change needed rather than specifying an inflexible requirement on current corporate structure. And the other example, which is maybe a little bit more outside the box, there's some of it in the chat box going on, is that given that we want the RCE entity to be knowledgeable in this interoperability space and have a demonstrated record, it's hard to find an organization that would be perceived as neutral with that set of requirements. So is there the potential for a newly formed multi-stakeholder organization to emerge that is made up of organizations that have the credibility but would be perceived as balanced in terms of its governance?
All right, thank you. And it looks like one more comment, Sasha, and then we're going to have to go to public comment.
I think we would want to add an expertise requirement to the RCE expectations so that they would have knowledge and familiarity with the healthcare interoperability space and then be prepared to execute on the rapid pace of the expectations laid out in the contract.
All right. Thank you, Sasha. Lauren, I'll turn it over to you to open up for public comment.
Thanks, Denise. Operator, if we can open the public line, please.
Certainly. If you would like to make a public comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue, and you may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. Again, that is star 1 to make a comment at this time. Our first comments are from the line of Brian Ahir with Aetna. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Great conversation today. I certainly agree with the points on patient access to health information, as well as David's point on that it should be with implementation guides. That's probably the only way it would actually work. One thing I'm curious if the task force or maybe even the larger committee is considering how the pilots might play out and if that could be for the RCE possibly a year 2 milestone. The pilots that ONC under the CARES Act is required to do in collaboration with NIST of the framework. Thank you.
Thank you. Operator, do we have another comment?
Yes, our next comments are from the line of Mari Savix with Chime. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my comment. Great comments today. A few things to consider. First of all, strongly agree with the comments from David McCallie regarding starting backwards and looking about where you want to end up. The use of use cases is incredibly important. I think that collectively as an industry, we've been guilty of swallowing the apple whole, and instead we should look to identify the use cases and pilot test them, as many others have said, as well as rely on implementation guides. So that's, I guess, a process-related comment. With respect to the construct of the RCE, we strongly support a nonprofit entity, ideally a 501c3, and a board that is multi-stakeholder to include providers and other representative stakeholders. We don't think it should be unduly represented by, say, a particular interest in the industry. So we don't think the RCE should be coming from, like, say, a vendor perspective or a payer perspective. It should be totally neutral. And then in terms of measuring satisfaction, if you think about the 21st Century Cures Law and that it asks for interoperability to be with minimal effort, in terms of measuring satisfaction, I think you'd want to do it from both the provider side and the patient side. And with respect to the provider side, there have been surveys in the past that CMS has done on national provider satisfaction. And while they didn't involve technology because they were several years ago, I'm happy to provide background to the committee. This might be something that you would ask the clinicians who are serving patients in a variety of settings, whether or not they feel like they have seamless access to information. Thanks for taking my comment.
Thank you. Operator, do we have another comment?
We have no further comments at this time.
Okay, Denise, I will hand it back to you for the last few minutes.
All right, thank you. We could take the last few minutes to have any other further discussion, but before we end the call, I just want to make sure that we are permitted, and ONC can let us know this, to have the task force members provide any input they may have that they weren't able to get to us on the call today via email. Is that permitted?
Yes, the email. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Lauren?
I'm sorry, I thought I heard a comment. So, no. Denise, you're asking if we can capture additional comments from email address?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, so the email address that's provided on the screen, they can submit their public comments there, and those will be delivered to the full task force.
And the task force members
can do that, right?
Yes.
That's mm-hmm. what I was asking as our homework for the task force members to cover the questions we didn't get to discuss today, given our tight timeline, aggressive timeline to get this done.
I just make sure we make sure that Lauren is included on any correspondence to make sure that she can help us stay honest to ONC's obligations relative to FACA rules.
Yes, and Zoe Barber as well.
Yeah.
What is the timeline expectation for homework? Is there a due date then? And can I just clarify that then we would send our homework to the same email address that's on the screen? Is that the directive?
I'd send it to the task force members as well as Zoe and Lauren.
Yeah, and the email on the screen, I think, is what I heard Lauren say.
Yeah, well, the email on the screen is only for if you want to provide an additional public comment. But if you just want to converse with each other, then yes, email. I believe we have an email distribution for this task force, mm-hmm. inclusive of the leads and myself and the chairs.
Oh, okay, good.
And maybe it would be helpful if I send out an email to the entire task force directly after this meeting with the homework, the questions that we went over today, and the instructions for where you guys can submit those or your answers to those.
Yeah.
And after the meeting on the 5th, we're going to go write up draft recommendations and then take two meetings to review those draft recommendations. But we want to make sure that all of the input from the task force gets received in time for that kind of go dark period to write up the draft recommendations. You will get another crack at it when we review those draft recommendations with the full task force. So you have until the 5th. But the earlier, the better.
And we will try to do a better job getting information out to you in advance of our meetings. It's just we were on a really tight timeline this week.
It'll get better, but you it's always hard when you start off. So I don't see anything being amiss. Thanks so much.
All right. And we have a couple of minutes. Any other comments or next step items that we need to cover?
Yeah, Denise, maybe you want to just go to the homework slide so people can see how they want to prepare for Monday.
Oh, okay, if we can do that. All right, so you will be receiving some extracts, and you may have already received them from the 21st Century Cures Act, just so that you have that to visit as you're thinking about your input on our work. And then if everyone could make sure that they review the TEF, the draft TEF, and these pages listed here for our discussion on Monday, that would be very helpful. And I know Zoe will be preparing some slides that Arian and I will review to send out with the questions that we're going to discuss on Monday. And Arian will be leading that call.
Okay.
Any questions or?
Good call. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, for your great input.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will adjourn.
Bye-bye.